At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, a weekly podcast hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Full of Beans is here to share the unheard voices of those who are living with, supporting, researching, or working in the field of eating disorders. Each conversation aims to bring a different perspective and understanding so that together we can learn, advocate, and connect to realise we are not alone in our struggles and that recovery is possible. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode. And just a gentle reminder that these episodes are not a replacement for therapeutic support. So if you are struggling, please do reach out and know that there will always be someone there to listen. And finally, thank you to our podcast sponsor, Nightingale Hospital, for your continued support. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Alex Walker. Alex is an eating disorder counsellor and coach and a well-being speaker who works with clients to overcome eating and body image difficulties following on from her own personal experience. This week's festive episode brings a real perspective of being in recovery at Christmas, with advice on how to navigate the season that isn't just a few quick tips feeling like they diminish the struggles of Christmas.
I know for me, Christmas can be one of the most difficult times when you're living with an eating disorder. There's so much pressure and expectation, and this idea that the eating disorder might just go away for the day, or that you should actually just put it aside for the day. I know it's not as easy as that, and I think that one thing is really important is embracing Christmas for what that means for you. So that's exactly what Alex and I spoke about in this episode. Not making Christmas perfect, not doing everything that you think you should do, but doing what you want to do and what feels right for you and your recovery. I really hope you enjoyed this episode, and happy Christmas.
Welcome back to the Full of Beans podcast. Today I am joined by Alex Walker, and I'm very excited, and we've got a festive special episode for you today. So thank you so much for joining me on the podcast, Alex.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here. I'm excited that it's a Christmas special.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those ones where it's like it's exciting but also for a lot of people very daunting, which I'm sure we will come to later to talk about those mixed emotions around Christmas and the festive season.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's very important.
Yeah, for sure. So did you want to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yeah, I'm Alex Walker. I run Alex Walker Counselling. So I'm a counsellor and a coach. I work with people that have eating disorders and body image issues.
Amazing, amazing. And incredible work you do as well. I know that we met on social media. You put such incredible things and insights for people on there. So I'm very excited to speak to you today. I thought a great place to start would be to maybe think of, I guess, some of the common struggles that you hear people when you're working with them talk about in relation to struggles with body image and food around the festive season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the list is very long of things that can come up when you have an eating disorder and body image issues this time of year. I think sometimes on social media, it looks like recovery magically gets easier in this month of December, and I know for me and I know for my clients, it, if anything, gets harder, it gets worse. And there's so many reasons why. I think one of the main things is this whole season really does revolve around food, parties, work meals, Christmas markets, the Christmas dinner, Boxing Day dinner, whatever it may be. It just seems like food is everywhere.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. And you know what you've just said there, like, it often, I think when, well, I guess when I was in my own recovery, like, I just used to worry about the day, like Christmas Day. And I don't know about you, but for me, that was always actually the day that I felt was most manageable. I always have a very small Christmas. So it felt like a day that, you know, there was obviously differences because there was eating at different times and eating different foods, but I was able to kind of
feel supported or put in my own coping mechanisms. It's actually the weeks leading up to Christmas that I found most difficult, as you were saying there, with Christmas markets, Christmas meals, work events, social events. And that can kind of throw you off completely from your normal structure or your normal routine. I don't know whether that's something that you found with you and your clients as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of the chat that we have this time of year is, I've got my Christmas work dinner. It's a sit down free course meal. I don't know what to do. I have to go. Or, you know, all my friends are having drinks and food. I don't know what to do. A lot of the social stuff leading up to, I mean, I went to Christmas markets this weekend, and I mean, 50% of the stalls are food related, and walking around there now, I can obviously help myself and have what I kind of see and fancy. But that would have been so scary and so daunting when I was in recovery, because I would have been able to smell it all. I would have wanted it all. I'd have been, you know, feeling all of these really strong emotions inside, and wouldn't have been able to actually enjoy why I was there, be present and have a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can really resonate to what you're saying there. And I guess, I don't know whether this would be a useful thing for the listeners, but I'm just thinking of maybe if I explain my response to that situation, and then maybe you could provide some advice or things that you maybe would suggest to your clients to help navigate that kind of event. And we could maybe go through a few different events that are common challenges for people. But for me, whenever I think of Christmas markets, is exactly what you've just said there. It's that pure and utter overwhelm of, you know, not just the food, but the noise, the people. You know, I find it hard enough to go into a shop and pick a sandwich, let alone when there's so much busyness around you at a Christmas market. And often I think what happens to me is I get so overwhelmed by the different smells, the different noises, people hustling and bustling, and almost feel that pressure to eat something or to engage, that I just don't want anything. And I wonder if that's something that you've heard from other people, and kind of what your advice would be for navigating something like a Christmas market.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you've said is so common. And then we just decide not to have anything, and then we feel disappointed in ourselves or feel like we've taken step backs in recovery or whatever it may be. I think the first thing that I always tell my clients is just know that it's okay to not be having the best time in the world. It doesn't need to be perfect. You're allowed to feel upset. You're allowed to feel anxious. You're allowed to panic and cry while you're there. That's absolutely part of recovery, and it's fine to do so. I think kind of clarity around choices, not choosing an option that is going to really make you spiral into an uncontrollable reaction. Mm-hmm. Just asking yourself maybe what feels least harmful, what feels safest for my body right now, what do I feel like I can manage and deal with. Maybe that's getting something with someone else and sharing it. Maybe, you know, just trying to figure out for each individual what feels manageable. What do I think I'm going to be able to deal with? Not in the perfect way, because you're probably still going to feel a bit of guilt and maybe a bit of anxiety, but we just don't want people to be doing things that are just going to send them spiraling. I think that's what a lot of us do. We try and push ourselves and do these big recovery things, and it doesn't always work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you were saying there, I think rings true for the whole of recovery in terms of not necessarily trying to make everything perfect. And what you were saying earlier about social media, I think that Christmas markets and you know, Christmas social events and stuff are really bad for that, in terms of people posting pictures and it looking like they're having a perfect time. I personally, I think this is maybe more of a neurodivergent thing, but can't think of anything worse than going to a Christmas market. But I think that, you know, for a lot of people, that is something that they enjoy and they want to do with their friends. But as you said, choosing an option that feels manageable rather than, you know, if you're already in that situation feeling anxious and that's all heightened, maybe that's not the time to do something that, you know, really is out of your comfort zone. But equally, if you want to do something that's out of your comfort zone, you know, making sure that you've then got support afterwards. Because I think for me, another thing that comes to mind in this sort of situation is maybe being able to do it in the moment, but then that intense guilt and anxiety afterwards. And I think a lot of the time, as I was getting further on in my recovery, I was able to do something in the moment to engage or to, you know, be with other people. But it was then when the event was over, you know, feeling that real guilt and shame that then lingered quite a lot afterwards. Do you have any advice for those sorts of feelings?
Absolutely. And I think the first thing is just expecting the emotional crash, like don't fear it. So have a bit of a preparation plan in your head of, okay, I'm with my mom or dad or boyfriend or girlfriend. I can talk to them later if I'm feeling overwhelmed. Know that it might feel really rubbish. It might feel overwhelming, but you've probably felt like that before and you've probably got through it. Remind yourself that it's completely normal. So I think a lot of us, what we try and do is after a challenge, we try to fix the feeling. So we try and restrict or compensate, apologize, do all of this stuff, minimize what happened, kind of scramble for, you know, to let yourself fix that panic rather than sitting in it and acknowledging that it's normal and it will pass. I think they're my kind of main things. Obviously, a lot of people that work with me have tech support. So they're, my client might message me and say, I'm at a Christmas market, there's donuts here, I'm going to challenge them. And I'll ask them, okay, does that feel like something that's manageable for you at the moment? And they might say, yeah, I feel like I can. And then they'll do it. And then they can message me after and we can talk through all of those really difficult feelings and work through them together. If they say, oh, I'm not sure, I'm feeling really scared, maybe they're feeling really overwhelmed, they're not with someone that can talk to them through it, then, you know, we'll say, okay, well, maybe that's not the safest option for you right now. Is there something else that you can challenge and try and do instead?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? You know, I think so often in recovery, there's this tendency or this desire to want to jump in at the deep end. And I don't know, when I was in recovery, like, I remember putting this video up once of me jumping off a cliff into the sea. And it honestly must have taken me about an hour to get up the courage to then jump into the sea. And I remember kind of saying to myself, you know, this is what recovery needs to look like. You've got to just jump in and, you know, just believe that everything will be okay. And I think in some approach, sometimes that could be great for people, but actually my recovery was a lot gentler than that. And it was kind of just taking things step by step. As long as the overall trajectory was, you know, positive and leaning more into a recovery space, I think that you don't have to necessarily throw yourself in at the deep end and do something that absolutely terrifies you, because sometimes that can actually lead to regression or, you know, just resorting back to the eating disorder because you know that that feels safe. And even though it might not be, you know, the most healthy behaviors and things like that, when it feels safe, it then feels hard to pull away from.
Yeah, definitely. And I think for me, when I got to a place where recovery felt a bit more stable and I felt like mentally I'd done a lot of healing, then, you know, if I was at a Christmas market and there was a not very scary option and a very, very scary option, I would purposely choose the scariest option, do the opposite of what the eating disorder wanted me to do. But I did that because I knew that I could sit with all those really difficult feelings that were coming after. Whereas at the beginning of my recovery, I would have just chose a smaller challenge that felt more manageable in that moment.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a great idea. It's kind of over time you build up that resilience and that ability to navigate those emotions. So kind of a step-by-step approach can be really good. Another question I wanted to ask you, because I found this really difficult in my recovery. You mentioned kind of at the Christmas market and hopefully being with somebody that you can talk to and, you know, can have their support. I think one thing that can be really difficult is work parties, because I think there's the kind of, you know, your colleagues may not know what is going on for you in regards to your eating disorder or what might be supportive. But there can often be a pressure to attend and to engage and what have you. What would your suggestions be for kind of things like work Christmas parties to navigate those in recovery?
I always say to my clients, I mean, I'm the queen of dipping out of places early because that I like kind of just disappear without saying goodbye. So I always say to clients, you do not have to stay the whole time. You can leave when you want. You're allowed to come late, leave early, dip in and out. You know, your contract doesn't say you have to stay for the whole Christmas party and go through mental torture if you don't want to. So give yourself permission before you go and have a bit of an exit plan of, okay, if I feel like this, then I can maybe text this person to pick me up, or I can go next door and have a coffee, or I can just go outside and get some fresh air, or I can just get a cab home and leave. I think having that in place before you even go is really helpful. And I think that can reduce a lot of the anxiety. Because I think if you feel like you're trapped somewhere, the anxiety is just heightened immediately anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know whether this is just my brain that works in this way, but so I, at the weekend, one of my friends had invited me to go to a drag show and I really, really wanted to go, but I was so incredibly exhausted because I'd had quite a busy week last week. And so in my mind, I just kept being like, no, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. It's going to be a lot. I don't want to go. And then as soon as I said to my friend, I'm not sure I'm going to come, I then all of a sudden wanted to go. And it was as though I'd given myself that grace of, well, you don't have to go if you don't want to. And I was then able to be like, ah, well, the thought of not going, actually, I do really want to go. And I wonder if it's a similar thing with what you've just explained there, that if you say to yourself, go along and see how you feel, you don't have to stay for the whole thing. If you get there and you hate it, you can leave. I feel like giving yourself that grace and that compassion of being able to just do what feels right for you and what you need in the moment can often be quite encouraging and inviting to go. And then knowing that if you really want to leave, then that is absolutely fine.
Yeah, absolutely. It reduces the anxiety. I mean, one of the other things I hear most about work parties, I think, is the conversation around food and being good and all of that kind of stuff. You've got so many different people with different relationships with food and their body image in one room. And I think a lot of comments like, you know, I've eaten so much this week, I'm going to have a dessert and be naughty, I'm going to start going to the gym in January, all of that rubbish diet talk that can happen, I think is something that is very, very common in the workplace in general.
Yeah. Do you know what? I mean, obviously I'm self-employed now, but I remember because I worked during, I got my first job during COVID, so that was online. And then I remember going into my first in-person job and I was absolutely astonished by how much diet talk there was. Like I have never in any environment experienced that before. And obviously I've been in places where there's been people from different walks of life before, but I find it incredible how all workplaces seem to be so focused on diet culture and chat about it. And part of me wonders if it's like a common ground conversation people know that they can have because, you know, everybody has a relationship with food and their body. And it's almost like, you know, in a weird way, talking about the weather. But it really shocks me how open people are to talking about dieting and stuff with their work colleagues.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think you're having a lot of your meals together and you're seeing, I mean, you see people at work more than you see people at home. So I think the conversations do unfortunately come up. I know when I worked in an office, it was rife. I mean, I was working with all sort of like 50 to 60 year old women that had been to Slimming World and Weight Watchers and been dieting their whole life. So that was just, I guess, their mindset. They were really, really in the depths of diet culture in the way that they fought. I mean, I'm luckily quite a sort of say what you think person. So I will just kind of say, I don't do diet talk. I don't want to hear this. Or let's talk about something else. Or I don't care that, you know, you had that for breakfast. But I know for a lot of people and a lot of my clients, they have a lot of people pleasing tendencies. So they find it really hard to be firm and set them boundaries in a workplace because they're worried about what people might think if they say something. And I think that's really tricky.
Yeah, I think it's that kind of, like you say, that people-pleasing nature, that pressure to engage in the conversation. And I think for, you know, a lot of people that have struggled with eating disorders, there's often that of not quite feeling like you fit in. I think a lot of us will avoid confrontation like the plague. So if you then have to kind of say to people, I actually don't want to talk about that, that can be then met with confrontation. And I just don't think that sort of chat is appropriate for work. So, well, it's not really appropriate for anywhere, but anyway. And I suppose another thing that comes to my mind when we're talking about like inappropriate conversations and Christmas is seeing relatives. Now, and you know, I mentioned at the start, like I feel very lucky in this fact that I have a very small Christmas with my like parents and my partner. And so conversations about diet or weight just don't come up. And even I think because I'm obviously so open about my experience, even with kind of my grandparents and stuff, they know very much not to have those topics. But I think if you have got extended family that maybe you haven't seen all year and then you're seeing them, your weight could have changed in obviously both directions. And
What would your advice be for that sort of thing in terms of navigating those conversations with family members who, you know, make comments on your weight or what you're eating?
Yeah, I know a lot of my clients, we have like an older relative or family friend that is just desperate to talk about, you know, anything body related, and they're racist and homophobic, and they just want to talk about things that rile us up the whole Christmas dinner. And I think in any situation where someone is talking about something that you don't really want to be involved in, you can leave the room, of course. But if that's not possible, maybe you're sat having the dinner, you don't feel like it's appropriate to stand up and walk away, then that's where boundaries come in. That's where it's really important to be able to say, okay, you know, thanks for talking about how many potatoes I'm eating, granddad, but that's not very helpful for me. I don't, you know, I'm in recovery and I'm finding it quite triggering, or I don't really want to talk about it. And I think if you feel like someone is coming around that you know has a tendency to trigger you or say stuff that makes you feel uncomfortable, getting someone like your mom or sibling to maybe have a conversation with them beforehand to let them know, oh, you know, I don't know if you knew, but Hannah's in recovery at the moment, and she would just really appreciate if during your visit you didn't mention anything to her food or body image, because it would be really upsetting for her.
Yeah. And not to be a devil's advocate, I think in an ideal world, you know, that is the perfect situation to be able to have that conversation with family members and, you know, ask for those topics not to be brought up. But I know in my experience that hasn't always been possible with extended family members. And then if I have said, you know, please could we possibly not talk about this, they kind of take it as, you know, I'm calling them out, or, you know, getting angry at them, even if you do it with the calmest tone possible. Have you ever experienced anything like that in terms of people just not really being able to relate or understand what you're saying and kind of taking it as a personal attack rather than something you're trying to do for your own mental health?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a very defensive 70-year-old man in my life who is just set on talking about things that are quite offensive to people. Mm. And he does not like to be told that he is upsetting people, and it's... You know, we are responsible for our own triggers. And I think sometimes if something is offending us or upsetting us that someone else says, we do sometimes have to look inwards and work on our response to that. So he still says things to me to this day, which doesn't affect me now. I just kind of roll my eyes and ignore him. But he, you know, I've got a younger person in my family who does listen to what he says and does take it on board and does feel upset by it. And so, you know, we have to look at her response to that and why she's getting so upset by it, and just try and really reframe that for her and say, you know, okay, well, he's saying it maybe because of this, or he doesn't know any better, or, you know, it's so difficult because sometimes these people in our lives, they are also victims of diet culture, what they've learned. So they believe it as much as we used to when we were in the depths of it, that sugar's bad or carbs are bad. They believe that to their core, like we did. We've just unlearned it and are doing the work. They're not. So sometimes as well, I just try and have a bit of empathy for that person. Like, they don't actually know what they're talking about. It's quite sad that they feel that way.
I think you've absolutely knocked the nail on the head there. And I refer to it as killing with kindness. And not just in this sense, but with everything now, rather than getting angry at people or, you know, annoyed at what they've said, I do just try to meet them with compassion. And if they are actually saying something that they're trying to be mean, like, giving someone back kindness is literally the worst thing possible for that other person, because they just kind of want you to get angry as well. But I think in this sense, as you said, meeting them with compassion and with empathy is really the best thing. And I say that all the time to my mum, because she often gets upset about, you know, oh, you know, was it my fault that you had an eating disorder because I was on a diet when you were younger? And, you know, obviously we know that eating disorders aren't as simple as that. They're not just caused by one singular thing. But I'll often say, you know, I think unfortunately, you were raised in a household that dieting was completely normal and seen as something that women should be doing. And so was my grandma. And I remember one Christmas, my grandma saying she put like an extra potato to what she'd normally have on her plate. And she was like, oh, yes, I'm going to have an extra one, but I best run up and down the stairs a few times to burn off the calories. And I just burst out crying at the table, because I was really not very well at the time. And I ran upstairs and cried, and I didn't want to come back down for the meal. And
I think, you know, looking back at that situation now, I would have probably dealt with it quite differently. But I think that's because of having years recovery under my belt. But now I look back on that situation and I do just think, you know, whilst it's not great that she has then passed on that mentality to my mum and to me, also really sad that still, at, you know, whatever age she is, she's still holding on to those thoughts about food and, you know, being good enough and having to burn off the calories and everything like that. Like, you know, I would really hope that you would reach a certain age and not care anymore. But I think the reality is that we're all quite, you know, mind boggled with those thoughts and hold on to those things. So it really is just quite sad that still after years, you know, that's been passed on through the generations.
Yeah, absolutely. I think going home at Christmas and being at home at Christmas and around family at Christmas in general can be quite triggering for a lot of people. I think that's, you know, something I hear from clients a lot is the kind of returning back to the old environment. Like you said, kind of running up to the bedroom and crying. A lot of people, when they go back to their family home, see moments like that play over in their head, very triggering moments or times when they were upset or were much sicker, whatever it may be. Maybe there's other emotional triggers like not having loved ones at the table that once were, or, you know, just a family dynamic that's really unhealthy. And I think that is also just part of Christmas and the difficulty around navigating family and that side of things.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that's a really good point that you've just said, which I haven't really thought about. But, you know, if you have struggled with an eating disorder and your family home was where you struggled and you now live away from home, I imagine it could be quite, you know, traumatic experience to go back into that place and kind of be remembered of the ways that you were or the behaviours that you engaged in. Do you think that there's anything you can kind of do to make that situation a bit easier? Or I guess it's, you know, for me, I would be thinking not to kind of suppress those emotions. I do feel like that could be quite overwhelming.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, my mum and dad have moved now, but when I used to go back to the family home and go into my old bedroom, I mean, they turn it into another room that wasn't my bedroom as soon as I walked out the door. But as soon as I did walk into that room, I could just see myself really sick, like in bed and doing jogging on the bloody spot in that room. Like all of these memories would replay in my head. And same as when I go to my granddad's house, because my nan's not there anymore, but I would see myself like hiding in the bathroom when she was serving the cake or things like that. And now when I go to them places and I see these memories play or I have reminders, I just really try and think of how far I've come and try not to meet it with guilt or any negative feelings. I just, like any memory that carries a trigger or trauma or any kind of emotion, just try and process it in the moment, not hide from it or push it down. Except that, yeah, that is really sad. Like, you never, like for me, I never ate any of the cakes my nan made, and then she passed away. So I could sit and I could kick myself and think, she never got to see you recover, you never got to eat any of her cakes, and it's so sad. And I just accept it as being that. It's a really sad memory and it's really rubbish. But she would be really proud now that I eat a lot of cake and I'm recovered and, you know, that side of things. And I think just trying to be kind to yourself is through recovery the, you know, most you can do, and try not to beat yourself up.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's such a wonderful reflection for kind of all the situations that we've mentioned before about navigating them at Christmas. I think really meeting yourself with that compassion. And I think, you know, Christmas is difficult for different people in different ways, but actually, you know, being able to meet yourself with that compassion and say, this is hard right now and I'm finding this challenging. What could I do to make this easier for myself or support myself? What do I need right now? And I think, you know, one thing for me I found very difficult over Christmas is I'm very close to my family, but I have recognized, particularly over the past few years, I do need a bit of time out. You know, I need that space to be able to just kind of not even process things necessarily, but I think Christmas can be very overwhelming with all the activities and the pressures and the expectations. And it's actually, for me, it's been realizing it's okay to go and have some time just kind of sitting on my own and doing my own thing. And that doesn't mean that, you know, I'm not engaging or I don't want to be there or I don't love my family. It's just that, you know, that time of year can bring up a lot of emotions from one way or the other. So I think for me, like, just communicating that to my family beforehand to say, if I do need just some time, also if you need some time, like, it's totally okay. It doesn't mean that we're kind of having a bad Christmas or that anything's wrong. It's just that this can be quite an overwhelming time of year for loads of different reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. And that expectation to be happy and jolly and having the best Christmas, and the pictures on social media of the pretty Christmas markets and the dinners and the food, it's so difficult, because you are allowed to feel like shit this Christmas. You are allowed to have a really difficult December. I know for myself, I don't struggle with food anymore, but my dad's poorly and things in the family that are going on, I'm not going to have the best Christmas or the best December. Things are difficult, and that's okay. I'm allowed to go through that. You can't have a perfect December every year. It's not realistic. It's okay for it to be a bit shitty.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I mean. There's so much going on for people, and I feel like sometimes it's as though we expect life to pause for that week of Christmas, and all the difficulties and the stresses that we have in everyday life just go away. And whilst that's, you know, a really nice way to think about it, it's not reality. And so often I think it's kind of making Christmas the best for you right now in your situation, whatever that looks like, so that you can, you know, have some glimmers of enjoyment, but also not have that pressure to be doing everything and be engaged in everything. And, you know, it might not be the best Christmas you've ever had, but I often think that the Christmases where I've had the best time myself have been where it's actually been quite low key, and not all the frills and the pressure and expectation, but just kind of taking things back and kind of thinking about, you know, what's important to me, the people I want to connect with. And sometimes that is even yourself.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think a lot of people say, come on, it's Christmas, like, come on, cheer up, like, and I absolutely hate it, because, like, I just want to lie on the sofa under a blanket, leave me alone. I don't want to pretend to be happy today. It's just because it's the 15th of December, I still want to lie on this sofa and not move all day. I think we, you know, when we're sitting there lying on the sofa under a blanket with a film on, we're on social media, people have got the perfect outfit on, they're out at a party, they're having, they're smiling, and we feel like, oh my god, we're having the worst time, they're having the best time. But we have no idea what they're actually going through. They could be crying in the bathroom, they could be feeling lonely, they could be feeling anxious. We have no idea, but we're sitting at home beating ourselves up when we were perfectly fine doing that before we went on social media.
Yeah. And do you know what? I think that the times when I feel worst in my life are the times that I'm on social media more. I remember, not specific to Christmas, but when I first went to university and was really, really ill at the time, I remember I came home and I dropped out of uni, and my friend was like, I'm so confused because on social media you're having an amazing time. So, well, yeah, obviously I was posting those pictures because I wanted to validate that I was having a great time. And you also spend a lot more time on social media, I think, because you're always looking for that connection or that dopamine hit or whatever it is. And so you're on there more, seeing people. So it's kind of like that negative cycle. But I always think whenever people posting loads of stuff on social media, it might not actually be that they're having a great time, but they're kind of wanting that validation from others because there might be a point to prove or something. You know, if you're having that good of a time, could you not be just engaged in the moment with, you know, feeling connected to people that are around you?
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you. And I just want people to, and I say to my clients, I just want you to be able to have the best version of this festive period that you can. And if that is that you stay in and you're just watching Home Alone with your family, great. That's a great night. You don't need to be out drinking or out, you know, at a restaurant or doing any of these things if you don't want to, if you don't feel like you can. I mean, the pressure of going out anyway, I mean, I don't drink anymore and I'm sober, but I mean, I've not drunk for like 4 years now, but still when I go out, especially this time of year, come on, have a drink, it's Christmas. No, I'm sober, like, I don't drink, but people still put the pressure on. And I think it's the same with food, like, come on, just have this, have one, it's Christmas, it's Christmas. It's just so much pressure.
Why do you think that is, that people, you know, if people know that you're sober, because I can imagine that, you know, alcohol is also a difficult thing for people navigating recovery. I know for me, that was quite a complicated thing that I had to work my way through, in terms of, on the one side, worrying about calories, but on the other side, almost using it as a way to numb and to, you know, distract from the moment. But I think that you're so right in that, you know, people at Christmas, it's people, you know, they love the phrase like calories don't count or whatever. But it is as though Christmas is this time where, like, no matter what, like, involvement you have in life. I mean, I often have it, like, I'm vegetarian and people are like, oh, you know, it's Christmas, why don't you just eat some meat? And I'm like, well, I'm vegetarian and it's just because it's Christmas. Like, there's lots of things I can enjoy, but my morals don't go out the window, or like the things that I value.
I think people project a lot. And I think if people aren't happy or having a good time, or they're trying to force fun, like if I'm on a night out or out with people and they're really pushing me to have a drink, I don't think they're having the best time. Maybe they need everyone else around them to be really drunk and acting a bit crazy for them to feel more comfortable. I think I can have a perfectly nice, fun time without alcohol and I don't need to. And so I just put it back onto the other person, really, think, why did they want me to drink so much? Mm. Like, why are they forcing this on me so much?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good idea. I think it's often, I mean, I very rarely drink now, and people will be like, oh, go on, like, you know, have one, it'll be loads better, it'll be loads of fun. And I'm like, maybe for you. But also, yeah. I can be very fun without it. So maybe just because you can't. But yeah, I think that there's just, people have this idea of what Christmas should look like and, you know, how it will make a better Christmas. And I was actually speaking to someone the other day who said, you know, they've recently separated from their partner, and their children are grown up now. So this Christmas, they're going to have Christmas on their own and they're just going to potter about and, you know, they're just going to have what kind of is a normal day for them, but without work. And she said she absolutely can't wait, and that is going to be brilliant for her because there's no pressure, there's no expectations, she can just enjoy herself and her day. So I think that, you know, I love this for people, of being able to just do what feels right for you and enjoy the day, rather than having all this kind of forced upon you that you have to do certain things if that's not what you fancy doing.
Yeah, absolutely, couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Well, Alex, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed chatting to you. And I think this will be really useful for people, because rather than just saying, you know, smile and keep going, we've actually been quite realistic about the experience and, you know, finding what works for you. So thank you so much for joining me. Where can people go to find out more about you?
I think the best place to find me is Instagram. My Instagram is counseling with Alex, A-L-I-X, and also in the link on Instagram, in the bio, you'll find the link to all of my website and other information.
Amazing. Well, I hope you have a lovely Christmas in whatever that looks like for you. And I will speak to you very soon.
Amazing. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode on the Full of Beans podcast. I really hope you did enjoy it. As a little reminder, this is not a replacement for therapeutic advice, so please do seek support if you are struggling, and know that there will always be somebody there to listen. Many thanks once again to our podcast sponsor, Nightingale Hospital. Have a lovely week, and I will see you next week for another episode of the Full of Beans podcast.